Let's go. Now, Rabbi Yisrael, we're learning over here today about this week's parasha. We learn about many, many laws about business ethics. The chisimkru mimkor la amisecha ikonu davar mi amisecha al toinu ish es amisoi. One man shall not do wrong to his fellow man. There are multiple psukim in this week's parasha. I don't even have a chumash in front of me, but there are multiple psukim in this week's parasha that speak about, mention the concept of oino. Al toinu ish es achiv. Do not do wrong to your fellow brother. And the pasuk also says, concludes with v'yoreisa me'elokecha ani Hashem. Okay, it doesn't say that expression all that often. Thank you very much for passing the chumash. It doesn't say after each one of the Tayag mitzvahs you shall have Yirah Shemayim. Mentioning Yirah Shemayim is only said by very, very few mitzvahs in the Torah. And the pasuk goes out of its way to mention that you should have Yirah Shemayim when you do a mitzvah. Rashi actually explains because you can get away with it. You can get away, for example, tzitzis. You can get away with it. You want to sell tcheles. You can get away with it. Tcheles, the real tcheles, is very, very expensive. It comes from the blood or the secretion of a very rare a fish or a snail that's very, very hard to retrieve because whatever the story is. So it's very expensive. But there are chemicals in this world that can produce exactly the same color. And you can under a microscope, you can't tell the difference. And you can get away with it. And whenever it's easy to get away with corruption, the Torah has to go out of its way to say, V'yoreisa me'elokecha. Hashem is watching. Hashem is watching. What's the story? Maybe you'll know the story. The Chofetz Chaim, where a boy, you told me the story about a boy, he took an apple from under the tree.
Someone's watching.
Who's watching? Hashem is watching the other apple. I don't remember. There's some funny stories about it. If you erase them, look at anytime that person can do an avera and he can get away with it, like the pasuk has to fill in and say, if you erase them, look at. So let's discuss some examples in halacha of things where, in business, especially in business, more than anything else, you can always get away with doing things that are not ethical, always, and the question is always going to come back to haunt the person, what you've done, is this truly correct? Let's discuss a couple of examples, and based on every single example, the truth is there is no clear-cut answer. Every shayla in Dini Mimonos is extremely complicated, and there are no general principles, because every case is so unique. In Chayesh Mishpah, when people come to Bezin, the Chayesh Mishpah shayla, there's usually what's called pshara. There has to be some type of compromise. Doesn't mean 50-50, but it has to be, there's always another side to the story. Usually there's more than two sides. There's like three or four sides to the story to answer a halakha question relating to dinei mamonos. Okay, let's do some similar examples. Copyright laws. What does the Torah say about copyright laws? If someone used to be back in the day, software, Microsoft, it's back in the news. Microsoft Windows. Okay, you get a hold of software, and the cost in the market to purchase the software, let's say, $500, and you have it over here. You have it for free. You just copy it. You take, someone bought it somewhere, some company. You take it. And you can go and you can copy the software and put on your computer. Is this permitted or is this forbidden? Now, what are you talking about? Permitted? This is illegal. This is 100% illegal to do something like this. And yet people did it all the time. And in fact, people did it all the time. That's the reason why the price of software cost $500, taking into account of who could afford to buy the software. One person buys the software with the understanding that basically everyone's going to copy the software. How do you know this is true? The reason why this is true is because today, Baruch Hashem, there's new technology. And I don't know if you realize, with all these expensive pieces of software, today you don't buy the software anymore. The software is in the cloud. And today, it's a subscription service. Used to be years ago, if you buy a Microsoft Word, if you're an honest person, you buy Microsoft Word, it'll cost you a few $100. I know the prices kept on changing. You go buy a package, different rates, mm-hmm. student rate, you buy your whole package with the computer, with Windows, and this and that, the whole suite. If you're just gonna buy Microsoft Word retail in Staples, go to the store and you buy a box and you purchase it, it's gonna cost a few $100. Today, it doesn't exist anymore, that model. That model does not exist. Today, the way it works is you can get a hold of it, it's not gonna work. You can put it on your computer, it will not function on your computer unless you subscribe online and pay $8 a month, $7 a month, $8 a month. How could it be that it used to be it cost hundreds of dollars and now it only costs $7 a month? This is even in fact a revelation that the reason why it was so expensive years ago was only because built into the price of the software is the fraud that people in society are copying one from the other. Because since today you can't copy anymore, Baruch Hashem, they've created technology which is very, very powerful. It's not foolproof, but for the average person, there's no way around it. The average person today just can't go copy software. The only way you can get Microsoft Word to work on your computer is if you have a subscription service and you're actually paying $7 a month or something like that, all different types of subscriptions. That's affordable for many people. That's affordable. But a couple of years ago, 10, 15 years ago, it was not affordable for the average person to spend $500. So what did they do? They stole it. They stole and they copied it. Why? Because Microsoft knew you're going to steal it and copy it. So the one person that can't get away with stealing it because they're going to be audited by the government to see what's on their computers, they're going to have to pay $500. The whole society is sick. It's a sick society where they're charging $500 because everyone is engaging in stealing. Are you allowed to participate in that? If the Goyish world is participating in that, if the non-Jewish world is participating in this fraud, and that's why the prices are so high, how then does an Orthodox Jew behave in such a corrupt society? And the proof that this, we now know it's true, that was the thinking. Because today, when there is no possibility of committing fraud in such a fashion, the price is affordable. The price is indeed affordable. It's a revelation that years ago, when the reason why the price was not affordable was because of all the fraud. So let's say you'll find another situation where this fraud is. A Jew allowed to participate in this fraud? So here's the answer. I mean, what many say is basically, officially, it is awesome. Could not be more awesome. Halacha is halacha. Gezel akum is awesome. There is no ands, if, or buts. Gezel akum is all you're not allowed. There's a shail of tohos akum. But gezel akum, to go take a piece of software that you did not pay for, even though it costs $500, and the only reason it costs $500 is because Microsoft knows that half of the world is going to copy it. And that's why they have no choice but to charge $500 for the few people who are going to pay the money, because they will be ordered by the government and they will have to actually be accountable for not stealing it. So therefore, they have to charge $500, knowing that the non-Jewish world, nothing to do with us, is going to copy it. It doesn't matter. Just because the Goyim do it, it does not give a Jew, an Orthodox Jew, to engage in gezel. It does not give, there's no permission whatsoever. It is 100% awesome. That is what, if you'll ask any Rav, they'll tell you. Any responsible Rav, they're going to tell you. Now, on the other hand, there is a complication in this. And the complication is that when it talks about Lesoyne Udi, without going to all the protein sources, how it becomes practical, I don't know. It may become practical only in the Jewish world, not in the non-Jewish world. Some will tell you just the opposite. But how does it become practical? The practicality of the matter is, are you causing a loss of money by copying someone else's software or copying someone else's sefer? are you causing a loss of money? So many people will say, no, I'm not. I will never spend $500 on this piece of software. Never. I don't have that kind of money. It's not worth it to me. I will not spend $500. I'm not, therefore, by me taking it and copying it and putting it on my computer, I am not causing this fellow a loss. Interesting. You're not causing a loss. Many will argue that's not called Geneva. Problem is, you're just part of the problem. Because if you copy it, because you're not causing someone a loss, and someone else, I'm not causing a loss, and someone else says I'm not causing a loss, that's why it's $500. If everyone would, you would be willing to spend $7, for sure. You're part of a tzibur. For a person to say, I am not causing them a loss, because I would not spend $500, double-edged sword. But what would be if it would be $7? Would you pay? I certainly would pay for it. Well, guess what? That's why we're not charging $7. Is because there are so many people who are just like you, who claim that you're not causing us a loss. You are causing us a loss. Because if the price would be what it really should be, $7, you would pay the $7. It's only because there's so much fraud, we have no choice but to raise the price to $500. And now, that's right, now you're not causing us a loss because you're not going to buy it for $500. But it goes hand in hand. So the truth is, if this product was indeed affordable, you would buy the product. So by copying it, you are causing us a loss. You would give us money. You're going to tell them, but it's $500. Yeah, the reason why it's $500 is because you are part of a group of people who together conspired against us. It's circular. The whole thing is circular. But being part of this process is gezel. If you can prove to me, if the price of this product was $7, and you would honestly be able to say, I wouldn't buy it, which, you know, how do you know you wouldn't buy it? Really? You wouldn't buy it? Maybe you would buy it. Maybe if push comes to shove, you would buy it. It's hard for a person to really be true to himself. But that's not what's relevant. That's why this concept, which some rabbanim want to be lenient, and there are many situations where, you know, officially, if you ask a rav, am I allowed to take software and copy it? They will tell you it is awesome. And then, quietly, between the lines, they'll tell you, would you pay them $500 for the software? Would you cause them a loss? Then you know something? It's not really awesome. Technically, it's permitted. That is a very, very weak argument, because it's all part of the same equation. It's all part of the big picture of participating in a group of people who together, knowingly and not knowingly, have conspired to steal intellectual property from people claiming they're not causing them a loss, where the truth is they are causing them a loss. The situation has evolved into one where right now I'm not causing you a loss, but really the way it started is that you are causing them a loss, and it got out of hand. You're a partner in the crime, and therefore it's us. I once had a student. Now the thing is, there are exceptions. I'll give you an example. I had a story many, many years ago where there was a very, very beautiful sefer on Masechta, a certain sefer, had incredible diagrams, incredible illustrations. And I wanted to make photocopies, basically, of the entire sefer, and give it out to about 10 people. We were learning Daf Yomi, and I wanted to give out the whole sefer. I went to Rabbi Belsky, and I asked him, I couldn't get a hold of the person who wrote the sefer. And I went to Rabbi Belsky, and I asked Rabbi Belsky, can I photocopy the whole sefer and give it out to everyone in the shul. So he was like hemming and hawing. He didn't want to really give me an answer. He basically said to me, it's awesome. Really, it's awesome. But he said to me, tell me, you're giving the share, as I gave the share tonight, I need it tonight, is this me? Would you buy it? If you would not be able to photocopy the entire sefer, would the people buy it? I said, it's not even available, it's not in print. It's out of print. You can't even get a hold of it. And there's no way in the world my people there at night are going to buy the sefer. They're not going to spend $20 for one night. They're not. So, you know, we go to the daf, look at the picture, they're not going to do it. So he said, it doesn't seem there's any possibility here you're going to be causing this person a loss of money. And in fact, by giving out the sefer, they may like it so much, they may go on a quest to actually try to track it down and buy it. So in this particular situation, it would appear that it's mutter.
But even if they don't buy it, then he's probably buy it from someone who has an old copy, and he's going to make the money. It will never come back.
Maybe it'll be available. Maybe they can find it in a store and available. They'll find it somewhere. Chesnish, I don't know. So he basically told me, in my situation, it's so clear as day that I'm not causing this person a loss. Al pi halacha, it's mutter. In this very limited situation, Art Scroll, if you notice, in the opening any of their svarim, they write with the greatest warnings. You think, like, you know, they'll come after you. They'll very protective, extremely protective of their rights. Do they have such power? You know, you can write whatever you want. You can write in the book whatever you want. Do they have power? What they write, al pi halacha, is that correct? Our schools know it's the Messiah, right? You would think that everything is according to halacha. What they are writing in their sefer, do they have the rights to do that? To demand such power?
They have the right to do whatever they want.
Who says they have the right to do whatever they want? First of all, who says, are you causing them a loss? If I were to go in this year and photocopy, I want to show you something in the Art Scroll.
The guys who write the not use of Shabbos or whatever.
You can write whatever you want, but what they write in the Hakdama. You can write whatever you want, because don't they hate. Al pi halacha, what they write, is that correct? If I in the shul would give you out a photocopy of an illustration that they made in their sefer, is anyone here? Am I causing them a loss for a 5-minute demonstration to go do so? Am I causing them a loss? No, I'm not. In fact, it's an advertisement for them. So, but they're writing in the beginning of their sefer that it's usur according to halach. It's the worst thing. Is that really true that it's usur? Are you really causing them a loss? In many situations, you're not causing them any loss whatsoever. They're writing it. It's not so simple. I mean, these are very big, and especially when you add to the fact that when you come to something that is Jewish, you get much more complicated. Because mitzadech, when you're dealing with something that is religious, there's a halacha, ma ani bechinam, afata bechinam. There's a principle that Torah is free. Okay? There's a principle that you're not allowed to charge for Torah. Torah is free. Ma ani b'chinam af ata b'chinam. You're allowed to take schar b'teilo. You're allowed to take, there are other expenses that go into the publication, which is not in the realm of Torah. That is 100%, and that is indeed a loss. You're causing someone a loss. But if you're going to prove to me that in the situation you're giving a shir, and you're making a photocopy of something, and there is no way you're causing a person a loss, because the people are not going and would not have bought this product, this photocopy of one page of a sefer, and in fact, it's a very nice advertisement for that sefer, and it's all part of Torah, which Torah has a unique dispensation that Microsoft does not have, that ma ani b'chinam af ata b'chinam, to impart the Hashem's Torah knowledge. There's the people who are telling you with very, very strong asharis in the beginning of their sefer that don't you dare make a photocopy in any form, not electronic, don't make drawings, like they have very, very elaborate nuschais, You could write whatever you want, but al pi halacha, in a bezdin, it's not muchrach, you would win in a bezdin. I didn't cause you a loss of money. I did not cause you a loss of money, and it's Torah. It's even better than Microsoft.
There's a difference between the copyright and the trademark.
What trademark?
They developed a fund.
So they developed a fund. The fund is irrelevant.
The United States, the same way the OU, the symbol OU is not a copyright.
I understand that.
It's a trademark.
But you're not in a simple classroom setting where you want to present an illustration or you want to present a passage in a sefer, and you want to make a photocopy to make it easy and convenient for the students to read. Can you really tell me that you're causing a loss to the publisher by making a photocopy? No way.
If you let someone use your trademark.
What trademark? What trademark am I using?
The font is a trademark.
So I don't need that particular font. If that thing
right,
has been
so
published.
You can retype it.
No, they say in any electronic form. If I would go steal their font and publish my book, and I would have to pay. Look, I'll give you an example.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
You copy the word Shema Yisrael and you give it out to the kids in the class, and the kids cut up the letters and they make different words.
Okay, you see, we published this car for someone. This is an Ala Michya car. Every single thing on this card was paid for. Okay? We could have stolen everything. We could have stolen the fonts, could have stolen.
Right.
We paid for the font. $80, $80. We could have stolen it. We could have stolen the fountain. We paid $80. That the product should not be mitzvah hababa aveira.
Right.
Okay, we paid for a lot of things on this card. A lot of things that we could have easily stolen. The software, Photoshop. This is a legal copy. We didn't go steal a copy of Photoshop to go put this whole thing together. This is a paid subscription. We could have stolen. We're very careful that everything. Even though we do things, other things we don't pay for, but this we felt was a davar shebe kedusha, and the people that there was an artist also got paid too much money. I think everything was paid for, every little thing was paid for in full, so that this should not be a davar, a mitzvah haba ba'aver. Now, if I in this shir, do I make photocopies of it? I do it all the time. Truth is, I have from Meir Zlatowitz. He told me that he's doing this for me. I'm telling you, my guy for now, he's not doing this for anyone. He never did this for anyone else because I drove him crazy. He knew my parents very well. Meir Zlatowitz was very close with my father. Was very close with Meir Zlatowitz. He used to come. My father had a relationship with him, and I used to always ask him for the shirin when I'm younger. Joe, I want to make photocopies. Can I have permission? He would always reply in a second. Permissions at artscroll.com. I would get a response from him almost instantaneously. Permissions and asking from Meir Zlatowitz himself, he would say, yes, you can copy, just include on the bottom that this has been reproduced with permission from artscroll/Mesora, that it was reproduced with permission. And then I emailed him so many times, he says to me, I'm telling you like this, don't bother me anymore. You can copy whatever you want for your classes. Just put on the bottom, copied with permission from Artscroll Masara. I give you permission. Whatever you want from any safe that I have in Artscroll, I give you full permission. Okay, but they write with very strong asharas. Question, is this a violation of Al Toinu Ish Es Anison? In the United States, there are copyright laws. Dina de Malchus Dina. In Bezdin, there are in Bezdin also, Chazal speak about this, that a person invests money in producing a product. You make an investment. It's wrong. It's just wrong. Al toinu ish esamiso. Halachically, Bezdin can penalize the person. There are many stories going back in printers when they printed the Vilna Shas, and they printed copyright laws, intellectual property. And the Bate Din and big Bate Din, they stepped in and they mamish, they were cutting edge before the time of. Basically, they made laws of when the copyright expires. It's amazing. This was in the United States, there's such a thing like this. They ever get a copyright, get a trademark. The trademark's not forever. Okay, Xerox machine. Okay, the Xerox machine, they had a copyright. No one else allowed to have a copy machine for how many years? I mean, when that copyright expired, it's a proliferation of a million companies.
You weren't allowed to use the word Xerox. Can't use the word refrigerator. But
okay, but there are laws. In early times, they had very similar dinei Torah of people who published svarim and invest an enormous amount of money, and Bezdin said it's just not right. It's not right. Al toinu ishes hamiso. There was an investment made, and with the understanding that the money will be paid back through the sale of the product, and it's not fair. And anyone that violates the copyright for X number of years, or until they know they did this origin, this you don't have in America, until the product is sold out. Isn't that an interesting concept? You never hear of such a thing like that in America. You're in America where a person, such a copyright, such a thing exists, where a person invests in a product. You have a new invention, a new product. And the law is, okay, how many products are you going to make? We're going to make 10,000, okay? Until, and how much will you make back on your investment? How much will you make back on your investment? I'm going to make back double my, if I sell every single one of the 10,000 items that I mass produce, I'll make back double, triple of my investment. Okay, very good. No one is allowed to copy you until you sell every last item off the assembly line. It's not a matter of time. There's no date. No 50 years. There's no 5 years. It's not like declassified information. It makes a lot of sense. You made an investment. You're mass producing 10,000 of these items. How much are you going to make back? What's the price? You're going to make back double, triple, five times. That's very reasonable, very fair. No one is allowed to copy you until you sell the very last item.
That was the story with the Vilna Shas.
Right, exactly.
Because so, they were selling it by volume.
By volume. So no one is allowed to copy until the last volume is sold. If it takes 5 years, if it takes 10 years, it takes 20 years. That's a very novel idea, because in America, I don't believe such a thing exists. In America, when you apply for a copyright and you pay big, big bucks to get a copyright to the garbage, and you pay the lawyer's fee, the lawyers specialize in drafting all the documents that need to be done to get a copyright on something. There's no such thing as present to us how many items you're going to mass produce and how much are you charging, and you will wait until you sell them out. They give you dates. They give you fixed amount of times. Here's the date. In 3 years from now, it expires. And all of your competitors are all lined up. They're mass producing this in warehouses in Malaysia, in China, in Japan. And the second, the date, 12 midnight, when the copyright expires, the market is flooded with a copy, with a carbon copy of what you made. Today in the world, copyrights are done by time. Chazal, was it going back, let's say, 300, 400, 500 years, where this became very popular? They didn't do it by time; it was done by product.
It was much better. Because
it's much more. It's a different, sophisticated type of idea. Okay, but the bottom line is, there are always legal loopholes. V'yoreisam elokecha. Like we all know that if you want to open up a pizza store, the old famous question. You have a pizza store in Flatbush and you want to open up another pizza store. Go to a Din Torah. It's Hasagas Gevul. Al toinu ish es ani so. Do not do wrong. You're putting me out of business. So you go to a Din Torah. I'll take you a Hasmana le Din Torah. You go to a Din Torah and you present demographics. You present some information from the Business Bureau of the State of New York, and you show that there's enough demand, enough people in the city. So what is the law? You lose. There are enough people for both of you to make a parnasa, and therefore if someone wants to open up a pizza store next door to someone else's pizza store, you have all the right to do so. Excellent. You win in Beis Din. You win. Is it the right thing to do? If it was you who was on the other side, how would you feel? You would lose a night's sleep. You would lose many nights' sleep. You would have a lot of agmas nefesh. Because, yeah, I make a parnasa. I don't make a good parnasa. I get by. Now I'm going to struggle. And that's right, technically, because there are enough Orthodox Jews in this community who like pizza, there's enough business for both of us. But the truth is, there's really not enough business for both of us. My clientele is going to go to you, and it's going to cause, there's a lot of collateral damage. A lot of agmas nefesh. Competition is very good. It is very good. It brings the price down. But every business and every situation is unique. So even though in the boilerplate, of this in Shulchan Aruch. No, if you go to Beis Din, you lose. You lose in Beis Din. But answer the question: is this the fulfillment? V'yareisa me'elokecha ani Hashem. Al toynu ish esachiv. V'yareisa me'elokecha. Why does it say in the pasuk v'yareisa me'elokecha after it says al toynu ish esachiv? Because this is a matter in halacha that you'll always be able to win. You'll always be able to win. But put yourself in the other person's shoes. How would you feel? So you'll say, if it wouldn't be me, it'll be someone else. If I'm not going to make the pizza store next to his shop, so someone else will come make the pizza store next. So it might as well be me. That's right. Let it be someone else. What do you need on your plates? You to be the one who made the pizza store and caused the magmas nefesh. Especially if you don't even, you can make the pizza store on the next block, or you can make the pizza store in another neighborhood where there are no pizza stores. I need parnasa. No, you're right. What's there to say? Every situation is unique. You cannot generalize. On the one hand, you're permitted to make a parnasa. That's the way the world goes. Competition is healthy. But on the other hand, every person knows deep down in their heart where is the borderline. Where is that line, the red line you should not cross? Yeah.
But going back to what we were discussing yesterday, we see that it's modified capitalism, not pure capitalism.
Right, very good. Rav Chol is saying a new term. There's capitalism in America. In America, from a Goyisha perspective, adorable. You should, the best place to make a pizza store is right next to your competitor. You'll steal all of his customers. Okay, it's a dirty business. I used to work in marketing, online marketing. It is such a dirty business. You can't even begin to imagine the techniques, the tricks of how to market products. How, you know how many tools there are out there? How many tools? I'll give you there's a tool where it monitors all of the Google advertisements. Every single advertisement that is on Google is monitored by this spy program. There are many programs like this. And what do, these programs? They basically observe how long an advertisement remains. Every time someone clicks an advertisement, you'd be shocked and realize how much they're paying for your click. When you want to buy, let's say you want to buy a new laptop, and you type in laptop, and you have an advertisement on the screen, when someone clicks on that top advertisement, they can be paying $3-4 just for your click. And what happens? The average person clicks. You look around. I'm not interested. So it's $3-4 down the drain. Why would a company spend $3-4? You may not realize, because they put on your computer, when you visit them, a cookie. And they're monitoring you. And they're going to follow you wherever you go. And when you go visit your Jewish websites, you go to Maaz and Mishir World News, look what's there. Flashing is an advertisement from that company. And they're going to do this a million times. And there's some very crooked techniques to go to follow you around, and they'll get you eventually. And they know it. And they have it all calculated down to the penny. It's all they do the whole day. They make these mathematical formulas, how much it costs them, the price, hulu. It is so sophisticated, you can't even begin to imagine what goes on. And if it'll make even one penny, it's worth it for them. What do they have to lose? And they have it all figured out. Now, there are spy programs that basically monitor what other people are doing. Now, the people who are doing this, they burnt big, big dollars, millions of dollars in just experimenting to see what works, what doesn't work. And there are spy programs which monitor what goes on, and they see which advertisements last for weeks. And what is the conclusion? If this fellow was able to put up in this position, this advertisement, for 3 weeks, it must be it works. Because the amount of money he's spending on this advertisement would put him out of business if it didn't work. And if it's still there, after 3 weeks in the same spot, and is willing to pay that kind of money, he's doing something right. So you know what? Why don't you copy him? Copy him, even copy the exact text, the exact slogan. There's no law that says you can't copy there's a world of a difference in what you write. If you write click, call to action, where you put the word click here, what words you use, there's so much chachma in playing with your mind, the color of the advertisement. You know, in Facebook, these Facebook advertising is very sophisticated, so there's one rule, a very simple rule. If you put a red border around your advertisement, you will gain an enormous number of clicks than not having that red. There will be a major difference in the number of clicks you gain just by adding a little red border. Okay. So what about the words, the nusach, the image? So there are spy programs that monitor other people, and it presents you with all of their hard work. If this advertisement keeps on going like an energy bunny, it must be. It works. Because who in their right mind would spend this crazy amount of money, burn money, if it wasn't working? So just copy it. Who's holding you back? There's no copyright law on the text, the slogan, the color of the advertisement, how thick the red border should be. If it works, it works. That's the way they do business by the God. Now, if you're a firm Jew, how would you feel using the spy service? You pay $50 a month. I used to do it. You pay $50 a month, you subscribe to the service, and you have access to all this information, and you're taking advantage of everyone else's hard work.
They did it just now.
They've been doing this for years.
Yeah, but
it only gets more sophisticated.
The Chesed Fund has a new competition called the Chesed Yisrael. Exact same text, just the name is different.
Okay, exactly. Fine. So is this something which is ethical? Is this something which is ethical from an Orthodox Jew from his perspective? All you can say is, legally, it's permitted. Legally, Din de Malchus Sedina, who's stopping you? Who's stopping you from making a program that monitors all of the advertisements and all of the various positions? The psychology of marketing is so deep, it's beyond belief. Exactly where is the perfect spot on the page? They have these heat maps. I got to show you all this stuff. It's incredible. Where is the perfect part of the page where people's eyes focus on different types of websites? Exact location. Who's stopping you from making a program to monitor what everyone is doing for a period of time and then showing me which advertisement keeps on appearing again and again for weeks and weeks without any let up? It means one thing only. This is working. So if it's working, you do exactly the same thing. Take the exact words, the exact location, the exact spot, and copy. That's not nice. That's not nice. You've copied someone's hard work. That fellow who did that probably spent $1 million experimenting until he achieved the results that make it successful for him to maintain this position. And you come along and pay a subscription of $50 to buy a program that monitors everything and spits out the data? Is that ethical? Well, in the Goyisha world, there's no one stopping you from doing that. And in fact, it's the norm. That's the industry. That's the way it works. That's the way it works, because who's stopping you? Now, as an Orthodox Jew, is that correct? So there will be those who argue, why not? Why not? If that's the nature of the business, that's the nature of the business. Why not? It's not awesome. You've got this competition. It's a capitalist society. It's competition. When people are doing something, you can copy them. Why not? And there's a lot of halacha that says it's fair. But there are situations, and every case is unique, where you know in your heart, I'm really going too far. I'm taking advantage. I have an unfair advantage. It's not just competition. It's just, it bothers you as an Orthodox Jew to do this, to steal from someone else's hard work. And
at least it should.
What?
At least it should.
It took a should it. And you'll go to Rabbanim, you'll tell them, you'll lay out the entire thing, you're gonna get mixed answers. Some will tell you, if this is the business model in the belt, and you're not stealing, and whatever a person does is public knowledge, so what's stopping someone from observing? I'm just giving you one little example. It's fair. If it would be unfair, then there would be laws. The government would make laws. You'll say the government can't possibly interfere in this case. How could the government prevent people from doing this? It's impossible for them to intervene in this situation. So, but really it's unethical. It's a very tough question. And no one has a really good answer. As both, if you're a guy couldn't care less. Boy, they really don't care. Believe me, you should see what goes on. They couldn't care less. But you as an Orthodox Jew in this business, it bothers you. You go along the Daf Yomi, you read the pasuk, I'll tell you what you should, and you go and you engage in this type of nasty competition of stealing secrets and spying. Where do you draw the line? It's a very, very difficult question. And the pasuk for that reason says, V'yoreisa me'eloi kecha ani Hashem. Business is dirty. Be very careful. You're not always going to be able to have clarity in halacha in these matters. You have to really look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, am I Yorei Shemayim? It's tough, okay? And I don't think you're going to find the answer. You're not going to find the answer to many of these.
The answer might be, if you have to ask, the answer.
Not necessarily true. I once had a very big dilemma, and I asked a very big person, and he told me, it is 100% mutter. Don't feel bad about this. I asked a question, I felt bad in a certain area, and he told me the question is ridiculous. It's 100% permitted to do what you do. There's nothing should bother you one iota. And then I remember my father, in the YU, he was working for a company, and he told my father what the company does. My father told him, you're crazy, quit your job. What kind of crazy thing is this? What kind of crazy business are you in? This technique that they're doing is totally unethical. Just because it's by the law, it's legal, they're allowed to do this. And the government audits them and they get and everything is clear. What kind of crazy nonsense is this you're doing? This is why you want to spend your life engaging in this type of activity? So, you know, yesh v'yesh. The bottom line is, in business, the end of the day is, here, look in the mirror, v'yoreisa me'elokecha. It's complicated. Technology is very complicated. There's din d'malchus adina, and according to din d'malchus adina, many things are permitted. And this is how the world operates. Marketing is really a great example to talk about ethics, because the techniques in marketing are just beyond what goes on, and it's permitted and it's the norm and that's how it's done. And the question is, from an Orthodox Jew's perspective, is this something you really want to be doing? How is it going to affect your neshama, your whole attitude of stealing from someone else? Okay, I want to talk about another side topic relating to this, and that is quitting your job. Person is hired by someone. Okay, let's say you're hired to build someone's sukkah. Sukkah is more of a mitzvah. Talk about what a person is hired to do. A person is hired to do some type of work. And then in the middle of the day, you want to quit. I just don't like the job. I'm hired, let's say, to set up for a wedding hall, to set up the tables and chairs in preparation for a wedding. And I'm working, and now I'm halfway done. And you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I want to quit. A person is healthy. He has the ability to work. It's not like he has any handicap. I just don't want to do it anymore. I had enough already. I'm not interested. Is a person allowed to quit in the middle of the day. You hire yourself to do a job and you want to quit. What is the halacha? So this is a very complicated sugya. According to halacha, there's a sugya, a person, a Jew, is not a slave. There's no such thing by Jews as slavery, unless you're an Eved Ivri. Okay, if a Jew wants to hire himself as an Eved Ivri, fine. Okay, so then you become, if you're an Eved Ivri, then you have no choice, you have to do what the master tells you to do. Unless, you know, you're physically unfit. But if you're a Sochir, you hire yourself as a worker, you're not a slave. And if you want to quit in the middle of the day, in Shulchan Aruch, you are permitted to do so. So you hire yourself, I'm here to work for you for today. You're going to pay me by the hour, and I have to be here today, Tuesday. I have to work from 9 to 5. Here I am, and I'll do whatever you want me to do. This is a certain type of work. And now it's 12 o'clock, I quit. You know what? It says in Shulchan Aruch, it's permitted. Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim, v'loy avodim la'avodim. And that means the person you're working for has to pay you for what you've done until now. Of course, you're not going to get paid for the time that you have not yet worked, but what you've done until now, you have to get paid. And there's no penalty. You can't come and say you've caused me a loss because now you stopped in the middle of the day. I have a wedding tonight. Tonight there's a wedding in my hall. I needed someone to go set up all the tables and chairs and get everything ready. And you're my worker. You agreed to work for me from 9 to 5. And the amount of 9 to 5 is how long it takes to get the job done. And you decide at 12 o'clock to quit. And what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? Who's going to get it ready? How am I going to get it ready? I'm going to have to go hire emergency help. It'll cost me triple the price. Who's going to pay? Who's going to pay the loss? I have to go get an emergency to go get someone to come on a moment's notice. I have to pay them triple to get the job done right now. Who's going to pay me that loss? You caused me the loss. So you, not only am I'm going to deduct from what I owe you, what it's going to cost me now to pay triple to get someone to fill in because you violated your word. No. In Shulchan Aruch it says, I'm not your slave. You hired me for the day. I gave you my word, but technically, I'm not your slave. I can quit whenever I want. Too bad for you. Too bad for you that in the middle of the day, you're going to have to pay triple to get someone to replace me. Now, all of the commentators do right. V'yorei sanei lokecha. Although that bedinei adam, in bezdin, you lose. In bezdin, you lose, right? Because if the Baal HaBos takes the worker to court and says, he agreed to work for me for one day, 9 to 5, the job needed all of those hours, he quit in the middle of the day, I had an emergency, I had to go pay triple the wages to get someone to fill an emergency, I want him to pay that loss. I want him to pay the second, the 2 and 3, for what he caused me because he quit in the middle of the day. Bezin says to the Baal HaBos, I'm sorry, you lose. You lose the din Torah. He's not your slave. If he wants to quit, he's allowed to quit. You lose. Very good. You walk out of Beis Din, the worker won. In Shamayim, who won? In heaven, who won? The Baal HaBos won. A word is a word. I give you my word. I'm going to get the job done. I'm working for you 9 to 5, and you are relying on me. And I leave you, I hang you high and dry, I just walk out of here. In Shamayim, I lose. The worker is in a lot of trouble. V'yoreisa me'elokech. There's dine Adam and dine Shamayim. And many, many times in Bezdin, you have these almost all the time. You have situations of oino. Technically, you win. That's right, you win, you walk out of court, you win. There's nothing Bezdin can do. Bezdin's hands are tied. You're not a slave. A sochir can quit in the middle of the day. But don't forget, v'yoreisa me'elokech. Now, there are many exceptions to this rule. This is very interesting. Many exceptions. Now, again, every case is not, there's no such thing as clarity in Chesed Mishpat. Every case is unique, has different details, but there are general rules. This halacha that I told you that you can quit, you can walk away with clean hands, at least in Beis Din, is only true when it comes to a sochir. What is a sochir? I am hiring myself out to you for the day. I need a worker Tuesday to work 9 to 5. What are you going to do? You're going to do whatever I tell you to do, within reason, of course. And within reason, the industry standard from 9 to 5 is plenty of time to set up the tables and the chairs. And that's not unreasonable, that's expected, that's normal, that's a regular standard run with no industry standard, no problem. I quit in the middle of the day, I win. But let's say I don't hire you for the day. I sit you down the day before, I need the hall to be set up. There's a wedding gonna take place tomorrow night in 24 hours. You want to come in the middle of the night? I'll give you the keys. You can come in the middle of the night. I'm giving you, it takes a couple of hours. I'm going to pay you this amount of money. Get the job done. If you want to come 9 to 5, fine, that's perfect. That's be the ideal time to get the job done. That's how long it's going to take. You want to come in the middle of the night? Come in the middle of the night. You want to finish a little bit later, fine. I need the job to be done well within a certain period of time. I have a wedding. You want to do the job or not? I accept the job. You're no longer a sochir. You're called a kablan. I've accepted upon myself a mission, contract work. You cannot back out in the middle. That is not called slavery. It's a very powerful concept. Slavery is not kablanus. Slavery means you're a sochir. You work for me. You do whatever I tell you to do. You work from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5 is slavery. You come here, that's your job. Your job is you work for me 9 to 5. What's the work? Whatever I tell you to do. That's slavery. So the Torah says, listen, ki avadayim v'loy avadim la'avadim, you're not a slave. You're a worker. You can quit. Because if you can't quit in the middle of the day, 9 to 5, that's a slave. But if you accept upon yourself a mission, a role, a contract work to do a job, that's not slavery. That is not called slavery. That's called kablanus, whatever you want to term it. That you're not allowed to quit. And if you leave the employer high and dry in the middle of the day, and it costs him now triple, to find a replacement, to take over, then the worker is liable. He will win in court. The employer will take the worker. He left me. I gave him a job, set the tables and chairs. He quit in the middle. He knew the time. I told him when it had to be done by, and he did not do the job. He says, I just quit. Beis Din says, you caused him a loss because you quit in the middle. He had an emergency. He had to go get emergency workers, which cost a lot more on the spot. They should drop everything and come work for him. They had to pay triple. That's right. The worker is responsible to pay the losses. That is a very important rule in Dinim. Now, here comes a very interesting dilemma. Rabbonus. You have a rav. Well, let's say you hire someone to put up a sukkah, a dvar mitzvah. That sukkah. So what status do rabbanim have? And what status do people who are being hired to do mitzvahs? So let's say, for example, they have a rav, and they need someone to officiate at a funeral. They need someone to officiate, to lead the services for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, to blow shofar. And like this week's parash, one of these jokes, the two parashas, parashas Bahar B'chukosai, the Baal Kriya, he lanes parashas Bahar, and he stops in the middle after he finishes Bahar, after B'chukosai says, I'm not doing B'chukosai, I quit. I quit. And then he says, the queen, you quit. You can't just leave us high and dry in the middle. I quit. Sorry, guys, I'm out of here. So the shul is so desperate, they have to go next door to the shul next door. They have to pay the Baal Kriya next door triple emergency to come in and finish up Parashas Tukukosai. Triple. So then they take the Baal Kriya to a Din Torah, and they say he quit right in the middle. So when it comes to Avodas HaKodesh, is a person called a Sochir? Is he called a Kablan? And you can construct the cases. You can tell the person, you have to be on duty for the day. Whatever we tell you to do, we tell you to lane, we tell you to daven. In these cases, let's put in this fashion. Let's say you have a person that's very talented. He can lane, he can daven, he can blow the shofar. That's what he does. He does all of these things. He has all of these skills. And the shul says, listen, we want you to be on standby. We want to pay for the day. We want you to come to shul, be in shul the entire day. We'll pay by the hour for the day you be here, and you'll do whatever we tell you to do. Basically, they're taking a rabbi as a sechir yoim. He's a sechir yoim. And then in the middle of the day, he quits. And because he quits in the middle of the day, the shul has an emergency. They have to go next door and pay triple to find a replacement. When Yom Tov is over, they take the person that they hired to a Din Torah. He caused us a loss. We contracted with him. We agreed to pay him for the whole day per hour. He's going to be there the entire day, basically to be on standby. Whatever we want him to do, he'll do. And he knows that's part of the rules. If we'll ask him to daven shachris, he'll daven shachris. Daven musaf, he'll daven musaf. To lane. That's his skill set. And we don't have exactly clarity what we want him to do because there are other people, there are other variables. There are other variables.
Not going anywhere?
There are other variables, and we don't know what we want, but we want him to be on standby. And he quit in the middle of the day. And we had an emergency. We had to go pay triple to get a replacement in the middle of the day. We want him to pay that loss to us. So the fellow says to the Beis Din, hey, between me and Hashem, I'll take care of. I gave them my word. So v'yareisa me'elokecha, mind your own business. That's between me and Hashem. Let's just talk tachlis. Let's talk money. I'm not a slave. Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. Avadai heim voy avadim l'avadim. We left Egypt a long time ago. I'm not a slave here. So l'chori, he's right. Not so fast. When you commit to do meleches hakodesh, holy work, you don't have a right to quit. Even medine nemoines. Al toinu ish es ochiv. Ochiv means your brother in matters of the pshutishal mikra is describing cutting lumber, doing mundane activities. When you're serving in the capacity as a rabbinic figure or a dvar mitzvah, it's not clear. There are many poskim that say the rules don't apply. These rules do not apply. You are a slave. You are a slave. If you hire yourself out to serve in the rabbinic capacity, you cannot abandon your people. And if you have the chutzpah to quit in the middle of the day, that's right. And they have to go now pay triple? That's right, you're going to pay. You're going to lose in court. Okay, so when the person, like Rabbanus, now here's another interesting thing. It's very fascinating to take a contract. Are you even though when Rabbanim, you know, Rabbanim, they, I don't know what the standards are. They, you know, you get a job in a shul, they have a contract. How long is your contract for? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Would you believe such a thing? There are some poskim that say that it is also to have a contract to another Jew, to commit yourself to another Jew for a number of years, because that's slavery. Because when you commit yourself, you sign the dotted line.
What about Ksuba?
Ksuba is the Shibud Mamma. Ksuba is nothing. Ksuba is an obligation to pay money. There's no work you have to do. It just means in the case of death or divorce, then money from the estate is paid out. Ksuba is just a Shibud Mamma. It's a loan. It's just a financial obligation. It's not a service arrangement. I know it says Vano Oiker, the Azen, the Afarnis, the Sichi Lichi. That's really the Mamma. It's not a din of service, din of money. But if you are a serviceman to sign a contract, I'm going to do service for 3 years, and now first of all, you're getting into a question, is that even permitted? Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim, A lifetime, contract. You commit yourself for the rest of your life. You want to do that? You know what? It's slavery. It's not mamish slavery, but it resembles slavery. Who says that's permitted? Let's say you did sign the contract. Are you allowed to quit? Is a rav allowed to break the contract? The balabatim, they can't break the contract. They gave him a 3-year. We know that. We know that in the second law, you sign the contract. So the employer can't fire you. You have a contract. If he wants to fire, he has to pay out. He has to pay out the penalty of whatever the remainder of the contract is. What about the person who's working? Can they quit? Now, I don't know. Every situation is different. There are different clauses in the contracts of a worker if he wants to quit in the middle. Generally in the industry, people can quit whenever they want. Is that really permitted in halacha? Is that to leave your employer stuck in the middle? Where do your financial obligations begin and end in these things? And one thing appears to be very interesting in the place can be recites over here is that there is a difference between divrei choil and davar shebekedusha. Divrei choil, in matters of choil, there is one set of rules, where basically the worker has much more power, not a slave, and there is an understanding that a davar shebekedusha, you have much less power. A person has an obligation of arvos, a responsibility to people who he services for Hashem. This your service is not a service of ish es ochiv. Al toinu ish es ochiv yeresa me'elokecha. It's not in that category because you're not just servicing people, you're servicing Hashem. And your obligations take on an entirely different dynamic and different set of rules. All right, these just touch upon some few issues. We'll stop. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Sign. Be well.
Susan, you just finished.
Yeah? You sure?
Years ago, I worked for FedEx, so there's a Finnish guy decided to open up a grocery store, called it FoodEx. He's the exact same logo with the little arrow and got after him in no time, and it's like they got every single one. They said you can use our FoodEx, but you can't use the logo.
Of course not. What were you thinking?
Have a good day, everyone.
What was the guy thinking?
The logo is a trade.
Have a good day.
Yeah.
What was he thinking? Well, the guy?
Whatever it is, but they
I once read it. They asked a singer, one of his magazines, they asked a singer, like, you know, they used to take his Gershon songs. He's like Billy Joel, and they know these really beautiful melodies from the Gershon. And they'll put Jewish words.
Yeah.
And the Bible doesn't. And they sell a lot of owls, they sell public online.
Yeah.
So they read this in the magazine, one of the Mishpacha magazine. They said,
Hi,
yeah. They pay royalties.
No, so you know what he said? No, they didn't pay royalties. They didn't pay one penny. I don't know, certain time. They didn't pay one penny royalties.
Yeah.
He says, with such small potatoes.
Right, they didn't want to bother.
Billy Joel is selling the number of volumes, millions.
Yeah.
The
Trump
community.
They sued Trump for using his song.
No.
Because Trump is strong.
There was a fast food place near Wayu called, it called itself McDovitz. And you don't think McDonald's came after them?
Yeah, they did come after them. Interesting. Okay, could be. But the guy, I was shocked. It's Gezer.
Yeah.
He made it, like, the way
There's
the guy...
There's a difference
has,
between
yeah.
trademark
yeah.
and copyright.
Yeah.
OU, the symbol, is
yeah,
a trademark.
It's a symbol.
No, but it's a trademark.
Okay.
It's not a copyright. Because trademark is a much stronger...
A much stronger
category.
Of course, fine.
And if you do it, they can get your junction, stop you, whatever.
But I was shocked when he says, with such small potatoes.
Yeah.
They don't, it's they're not even on the radar that they should even notice anything.
Yeah.
That's what he told me. That's what they wrote in the article.
I think they said Billy Joel was flattered that he,
He probably said he's flattered. Oh, wow, look at this. The first thing they take my song and in halacha, you go ask a rabbi, is it wrong what we did? I don't know what they would say.
Yeah.
If it's Gezel, it's Gezel. And the guy, he laughed. He says, Don't worry. They're not coming after our few little CDs. How much money did we make on this already? With such small potatoes, it's a joke.
Yeah.
But they have to say, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Art Scroll doesn't care if you copy it.
They do care. Oh, they'll
come after. Hold on a second. They would have to say it because otherwise they lose the trademark protection. You lose the protection if you let someone copy it.
It was also the stipple of you.
But so they invested, their basic investment was the font.
Yeah.
You could write
the font. Every safer is unique.
No, forget this. I'm telling you, the basic investment is the font. The layout of the letter, that is a trademark. They don't want to lose that because then you'll have, Corin also has the same thing, a trademark on the font. So if you take that thing and retype it, you retype the whole Art Scroll in a different font, they may not have a problem. So they must say this legally to protect their trade.
All right.
You know, for example, I'll give you a mushroom, okay? Reebok sneakers.
Okay.
Reebok is a trademark.
Of course, okay.
So if they see someone opens another Reebok and they don't sue them, they lose it. They lose it. It happened with Xerox. It happened with Frigidaire. A lot of things became public, became so public that they can't keep their trademark. Although Xerox, you always say they write the word Xerox with a little R in it. That means registered trademark. And the OU, by using a trademark, became powerful because a copyright, you sue him. You have to go to court. A trademark, you get an injunction on him right away. He has to pay damages. It's illegal. It's a criminal thing.
Okay.
So that's why they're strong. You can't come and say a headshot.
Okay, I hear.
That's why they right away, if they catch somebody, you withdraw from the market. He doesn't care what your losses are.
Okay.
That's what happened with customs. Customs confiscates billions of dollars of merchandise because of trademark violations. You say on that it's the watch is a, what do you call the fancy watches? Rolex?
And yeah.
But if you say it's a Rolex, they can't do anything to you.
So let's assume on the tablet with Sonia. Let's say I had this happen to me this week. Somebody comes down for a tzedakah to the house. And we kept missing each other. So he gives me an envelope. I'm in Borough Park. I figured I'll just drop it off. So I go to, it's suite 206, okay? I went to the building, something doesn't right. It's like we're all residential. I don't see suite 206. So I realized downstairs, there's like one of these like services they do, copying, FedEx, UPS, the whole nine yards, and they have mailboxes. So I realized the mailbox is 206. So I thought that it's a shtickle, I don't know.
Misleading.
Misleading because, I may think this guy's got a whole office of duplex there, but the little office is like.
So that's the question. It's also the question.
There's a bigger thing also because a lot of people they say you look at the person's address. You see if he lives in Williamsburg or Borough Park. So he has nine children, whatever.
Yeah.
But if he only has a mailbox there, you know.
No, but I'm saying is that an issue?
Technically, no. Is it a violation of the erase of Elokeach Ani Hashem? Everyone is different. Everyone that's arbitrary. That's something that's that's something.
But another thing on workers, I had something interesting in before Sukkot. I had a kid, basically a neighborhood kid, asked him to give me a hand in the garage or something. So he gave me about an hour or so. I gave him $20. His father comes back a couple of days later with the $20. He says, my son told me what happened. He says, I want him to learn to do people favors if they ask him, not for money. I said, I would have to pay somebody to do this to me. I wanted to give it to him. He worked for it. Why not? No, it's buying a safer. I said, he's a teenager. He doesn't need another safer from me. Let him go buy sushi. I said, no. He says, he has to know not everything is money. I was like, even taken aback. But I don't think he was right.
Every parent is different. You can't.
No one's saying this.
Well, the money that he got is his father's kind of for him. Because he's a son of Hashulchan and
Oven. I don't know.
His father has a right to give back the money. You have a right not to pay.
The father is his chinuch. He's a mechanic of children. He has his derech, whatever.
Yeah, that's
teaches all.
Rabbi Eisman sent out a notice now that there's a charity is writing a Sefer Torah. It's based in Delaware.
Yeah.
It's a Christian group.
Yeah.
And not to send the money there.
Yeah. There's an enormous amount of fraud going on now.
Huh? Tremendous.
This always happens.
And they have Reb Chaim already signed the letter that you should give to Kupat HaIr. You should give $120 a minimum. You know, Kupat HaIr will give the money to those who need it.
What, the missionaries? What about this missionary in Yerushalayim, that thing?
Well, he ran away from Yerushalayim, he's already on the cover.
But what do you do with the kid, all the bris that he did? Do you have to redo it? Do you have the toughest down bris?
Yes, probably.
I don't think so.
No?
No, I thought you
already. It doesn't matter. It's a Maisa Mila. I don't think it makes a difference, no. It's a Maisa Uman. Bris Mila is a Geyser. The Gemara calls the Moil the Geyser, the cutter.
Yeah.
It's not a religious. We make out of the Moil, the Yitzhak. All you need is a mice.
Well, brachah of a tefillin was done. Was like,
no, I wouldn't say that.
His tefillin you have to redo. All his mezuzahs you have to redo.
These are old shot. They have a lot of different. These questions have already been answered in other cases that are very similar. There are certain rules. Generally, only from the time onward you find that he's
when he's revealed.
Anything that he did before you becomes public.
But they knew about it 10 years already, and they kept
quiet. So then maybe you're right. If they talk
about it, they knew about it 10 years.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything about it.
Happens,
they had it's the Rabbonim, and the Rabbonim was
they have Seifrim who go off the Derech. He goes to Derech. So the people, I got my Tillin from this guy. He wrote my Tillin. And now he's a Hal Shabbos. So what does that mean?
At the time, he was so
good. Oh. So you don't know if he's Mechal Shabbos today. Who knows if he's Mechal Shabbos then? So the rule always is when you do in halacha, it's not just that if you don't know, it's kosher.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, maybe it's kosher, maybe it's not kosher. No, halacha does not follow, people make this mistake all the time. Halacha does not follow reality. It may very well be that those two were written on Shabbos. They rewrote it. It doesn't matter. The Tzilin are kosher. In Shemayim, the Tzilin are 100% kosher because you don't know that they were written on Shabbos. As far as you know, he's an Erlich Yid. He was a good person. You go to him to buy the Tzilin, he's an Erlich Yid. No one knew anything. So you bought the Tzilin are kosher. Now he goes over there. So he went over there from this day going further. Maybe if he was one of there today, maybe he was Mechal Shabbos 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Do you know that as a fact? You don't know that as a fact. If you don't know that as a fact, even if it was true, it doesn't matter. The halacha is the Tzilin are kosher. Halacha does not follow the world of reality. Even though you may discover in the world of reality that things are not the way that they appear, if the situation is such and you have a halakha question, you don't know what the answer is, there are guidelines to follow, and if right now he went off the derech today, and the day before he was known to be a shomer mitzvos, then we pass him on the tefillin are kosher. And once the psak is given the tefillin are kosher, it's irrelevant what the mitzvah really was.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you're telling me that the halach is not following the world of reality. You got it. It's not following the world of reality. You have three pieces of meat. One is not kosher, and two are kosher. For sure, no sir. And they all get mixed together. Me'ikar hadin, you can eat all three pieces of meat. Because the non-kosher meat is bottled barat. We're machner, so we only eat two. We only eat two of the three. But me'ikar hadin, if you eat all three pieces of meat, how could it be? One of the pieces of meat is not kosher. It's treif.
Yeah.
It's treif. No, it's bottle bereif. Halacha.
Well, I call it 60.
What?
I call it 60.
60 is only when it's dover shriyash baitan. When you can detect the taste. When you have tarfus and you can detect the taste of tarfus in the kosher. Here you can't detect the taste, but the piece of meat tastes exactly the same.
Yeah.
You have three pieces of meat. Each piece of meat tastes exactly the same. Two are kosher, two is not kosher. And this is a fact. You have now all, they all get mixed together. What is the law? It's bottle bereif. Bottle bereif. Now, halacha ma'aseh machmir only to eat two of the three, not eat all three in one shot. But I think it's the Rosh. The Rosh says, if you don't understand this, you know nothing about halacha, you're told from the arts, you can eat all three together. Bevas achas. How could that be? The reality is, one piece of meat is not kosher. Halacha creates a new reality. Bittul Beroyev creates a reality, even though this piece of meat is definitely from a non-kosher animal, definitely from an animal, a treifa, it doesn't matter. The halacha creates a reality that all three pieces of meat are kosher. In Shemayim it's kosher. Oh, but it's not kosher. It is kosher. Halacha has its own world of reality. A guy goes off the derech. Okay. He wrote my tefillin. When did he go off the derech? January 1st? When did he write your tefillin? Before January 1st? Your tefillin are kosher. Oh, but maybe if he went off the derech January 1st, who knows what he was really doing behind closed doors the day before? Who cares? The question is, these are the conditions in halacha. Right now, we know it's Mechal Shabbos. Before this time, we don't know. Therefore, there's a cheskes kashrus, that is kosher. That is the reality. And the tzillin are kosher. For the Godel Hador, they're kosher tzillin. Finished. Reality, halacha has its own world of reality. It creates a new reality. Many people have a very hard time with this concept. They believe that halacha has to conform to science. And if there's a conflict between science and halacha, then halacha doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Then they threw everything out the window. That's not true. That's not the way it works. Over and over. Hilchis nida. A lot of these hilchis, a woman goes to a mikvah and they do different shilas. Happens a lot. At least, I don't know. But it seems to be really. You ask the question right now. Right now, these are the conditions. And you're passing on the conditions. Oh, but in the back of your mind, you worry, but maybe this. That's irrelevant. This is the halacha. This creates the reality. And this is what you do. This is what you deal with. And you don't take anything else into consideration. There are many examples like this.
Yeah, but a lot of people go. They want to try the more.
Kidim halei, they have chumers, and they.
Yeah. I had one when I first got married. We didn't know better. My wife went to. She went to Glatmore, wherever it was, and she bought chicken. And she panicked because there was no plumb on the chicken. So I know better. I said, made the chicken. I went to ask her. There's no plumb, but you can't use it. We wound up dumping it. And I realized afterwards, why did I give him a sound like that? I mean, you bought it in the kosher place, why would you say if it doesn't have a plumber, it's not,
You bought it in the kosher place?
Anyway, okay.
Well, I have a great day. Be well.